Good morning. Do you guys know the difference between Dubai and Abu Dhabi? Yeah, the people of Dubai don't appreciate the Flintstones, but the people of Abu Dhabi do. Yeah, well, some of you online haven't been subjected to my corny jokes for a while, so I had to catch you up. I actually wrote this lesson, it's been months ago, I think before we went online. I was on the schedule or something, and I had this ready to go, and then we ended up canceling. At the time, I'd been chatting with my dad and Devin, and somehow we got on the topic of Dad saying, "You didn't mean not to," because that was a response I got as a child when I did something stupid. "Well, I didn't mean to." "Well, you didn't mean not to." And I wonder, did he get that from you, Grandpa? I'm having other people saying that. Yeah, so that's a third, or it'll be a fourth generation if my kids use it. "You didn't mean not to." And it's funny, I have written down here, trying to get everyone out the door Sunday morning. And then this morning, it was a struggle getting everyone out the door. And I remember Dad trying to get us out the door. And so I was thinking about this, and I was thinking about, why did God create parenthood? You know, he had a lot of options. He could have done the, the stereotypical stork. Kind of stork drop off little baby. He could have had, like, you pray for weeks and weeks, and then all of a sudden there's a little ball of light that solidifies into a little baby. He could have just made it appear one morning. You wake up, there's a baby, right? Or why even have children? He could have created adults. Create adults, they age, they die, creates new adults, right? He had a lot of options. It's a weird question, but... And I think it's because it helps us relate to and understand him. Because in the course of trying to raise a child, we have to try to teach that child obedience and character and love and responsibility, respect, patience, all of these character traits that kid needs to develop to be a good person as an adult. We have to teach those things. And it turns out that we all have to learn those things to become Christians and followers of God. And it helps us relate to each other as well. And like an earthly father has to do, I thought it was funny that Justin mentioned this in his Lord's table when I had this that I wrote months ago, and we didn't talk. He mentioned that if there's no consequence or no price for sin, where will his kids be 2 seconds after he told them not to do it? If he just makes it go away, right back doing it. And God knows that. And like an earthly father, God disciplines us. So that's kind of what I want to talk to you about this morning. God's discipline for us and our response to that. Because with an earthly father, it's obvious when he disciplines you, right? I was pretty certain when Dad would discipline us that I was being disciplined. There was no question. I knew that I'd messed up, right? But God's discipline is more subtle. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to tell sometimes. Is this just the chance and circumstance that Solomon mentions in Ecclesiastes that happens to everybody? Or is this God saying, Derek needs to learn a lesson, right? It's very difficult, if not impossible, for us to tell. But I'm going to discuss that as we go through. I'm going to start in Hebrews 12. I'll be going back here a couple of times during the lessons. And I'm going to read the first 11 verses. So this is Hebrews 12, 1 through 11. "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding your blood. And you have forgotten that word of encouragement that addresses you as sons. My son, do not make light of the Lord's discipline, and do not lose heart when he rebukes you. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves, and he punishes everyone he accepts as a son. Endure hardship as discipline. God is treating you as sons. For what son is not disciplined by his father? If you are not disciplined, and everyone undergoes discipline, then you are illegitimate children and not true sons. Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us, and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good, that we may share in his holiness. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. Okay, so we're talking about God's disciplining us. And the first point is verse 6. Because the Lord disciplines those he loves. He loves you. Many times when things aren't going as we'd like, we wonder if God cares or if he hears our pleas for help. He does, but he needs us to learn something or to grow or to be an example for someone else in our trial. There's all sorts of purposes that our trials serve. But don't ever think that it's because God doesn't love you, whatever your trial is. I want to look at an example. This is in Matthew 15. Verses 21 through 28. This is Jesus interacting with a Canaanite woman that has something she'd like him to help her with. Leaving that place, Jesus withdrew to the region of Tyre and Sidon. A Canaanite woman from that vicinity came to him, crying out, "Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. My daughter is suffering terribly from demon possession." Jesus did not answer a word, so his disciples came to him and urged him, "Send her away, for she keeps crying out after us." He answered, "I was sent only to the lost sheep of Israel." The woman came and knelt before him. "Lord, help me," she said. He replied, "It is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs." "Yes, Lord," she said, "but even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus answered, "Woman, you have great faith. Your request is granted," and her daughter was healed from that very hour. So I want to ask you, did Jesus know that he was going to help her the first time she asked? He knew. So why make her grovel like that? He made her practice perseverance. And she needed to worship him. She was a Canaanite woman. She was not of Israel. So she may well have been an idol worshiper. She needed to worship him. And the faith that's exercised grows stronger. He tells her at the end here, he was fairly abrupt with her earlier, right? And then at the end he says, "Woman, you have great faith." So he commends her at the end. Right, because she's exercised her faith. She believed in him. He wanted her to persevere. He wanted her to worship him and exercise that faith. So we go back to Hebrews again. And I should have had a bookmark there. That would have been smart. But I'm going to learn from that. Hopefully. Okay, so verses 9 through 11 talk about how God disciplines you for your good, right? Moreover, we have all had human fathers who disciplined us and we respected them for it. How much more should we submit to the Father of our spirits and live? Our fathers disciplined us for a little while as they thought best, but God disciplines us for our good that we may share in his holiness. So the lessons that we're meant to learn are meant to help us. And they'll help us a lot, both day-to-day and in our spiritual life, right? And the separation there is really only in our heads. Our day-to-day life and our spiritual life are the same thing. So hopefully our day-to-day life has some spirituality into it. But the lessons we learn produce righteousness and peace, and all things work for good. How does it produce peace? Okay, you say, well, my world fell apart. How did that produce peace? It doesn't feel very peaceful. Because it teaches us to trust Him. To do what's in our power to do, and then what I call relax into trust. I'm going to do what I can do, and then I'm going to say a prayer and hand it over. Do my part, let Him handle everything else. This is the training it talks about that produces peace. The big question I alluded to earlier is, how do we know if something is discipline or not? We don't. We don't know if it's discipline or not. So I have kind of a series of things that I do when something's gone wrong, and I have a few verses that go along with those. To kind of lay out an approach that seems to work for me, and I think it's scriptural, and I hope it'll work for you. So the first thing that I do when something's gone wrong, actually, I want to try to do this whether things are going well or whether I think they're going bad, is to figure out what I'm grateful for that's going right. What am I grateful for that's going right? Every time something goes badly, there's always something that's going right, too. I remember when I had my motorcycle accident, and it was scary, and it was not what I would have asked for. I had a lot of blessings with that. One of the blessings was a result of something Amy had done years before when I bought the motorcycle. She says it was a condition of hers that I had all the gear all the time. So when I had that accident, I had on armored everything. I had no road rash, zero. I had a student of mine that was in a motorcycle accident. He hit a deer about a week ago, and he's okay, but he went skittering down the highway, and the highway is like a grader, you know, so he has road rash all over the place. I had none of that because that had worked out in my favor. The EMT that took me to the hospital was a classmate of mine, which made me a little more comfortable. You know, I have a job now that I didn't have to. If I'd been working in construction or at the factory, I would have had to been off for weeks because I couldn't hobble around on my leg. But I have a job where I could prop my leg up and keep going. There were a lot of blessings, a lot of things to be thankful for if I'm thinking about that. But if I'm not thinking about that, I'm thinking about, well, my knees swell up to the size of a volleyball. That's not cool. Hurts a lot. Hard to sleep. Pretty dumpy, right? But part of the reason I was dumpy is because I'm not thinking about this stuff. 1 Thessalonians 5:18 tells us, in everything we're to give thanks. That's the will of God. We give thanks in everything. It doesn't mean we're thankful for each thing, but we find something to be thankful about in everything. So that's the first one. So the second one is, when we're upset about something, pray first. Pray first before taking any action ourselves. What this does is it acknowledges that God is the source of all good things and reminds us to glorify Him. Okay, so for instance, I'll keep bouncing off my own experiences. When I turned out of my apprenticeship and I became a journeyman electrician, I was all excited. I worked for 3 weeks and work dried up for a year. I had 3 journeyman paychecks before I had no work. That was less than ideal. If I had prayed first, before I started looking for any sort of side jobs or something I could do, which I ended up happening, and we were fine, If I'd prayed first, that would have reminded me that my job is not the source of my income. It's not my sustenance. God provides that. He chooses to do it through my job, at least some of the time. Thankfully, pretty steady for a while now. But He provides for me, not me. Okay? God is the source of all good things. He provides for me. So I pray before I take any action. And this is the one, these first two apply to any sort of hardship. But this is the one that's specifically because sometimes a hardship can be disciplined. Look for the lesson. Do you know the difference between a wise old man and an old fool? Whether or not he reflected on the things that happened to him. Whether or not he thought about them. Whether or not he found a lesson in the things that happened to him. They say there's no fool like an old fool. An old fool is someone who repeats the same mistakes over and over because he never stops to think about what am I supposed to learn from this. So whatever's happening, it may be a blessing in disguise. It could be a stepping stone towards something great. It may not be discipline at all. It might be the chance and circumstance. Or maybe I'm meant to be an example for someone else so they can see me lean on God when things are going badly. And maybe that'll bring someone else to God. If I think of it as a lesson, it also prevents me from making the same mistakes over and over. Like Justin's comment, I'm sure all parents have had the experience where you tell a child, stop doing that, and then you walk out of the room to do something, you come back, and they're doing exactly what you told them to stop doing. Or conversely, they're supposed to be doing something, and you tell them, if you're not doing this when I come back, you're in trouble. And then they're in trouble because you come back and they're not doing it. Do we want to be in that position with God? If it is, like we can't tell if something is discipline or not, right? It could be chance and circumstance. It could be discipline. If it is discipline and I don't see the lesson, I'm going to have to repeat that lesson. Just like when I come into my son and it gets ever more severe as I go, right? First time it's like, bud, I told you to do this. You need to do it. Second time it's a little louder, more aggressive. If you don't do it next time I come in here, you're in trouble. What's the third one? He's in trouble, right? Normally it's not that bad, but usually the threat is as bad as the actual. You don't really have to do much if you are imposing enough, I think. But 1 Peter 1 talks a little bit about the blessing that comes through grief sometimes. I'm taking a little bigger chunk than I need, but I wanted to get the context. So this is 1 Peter 1, 3 through 7. Praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ. In His great mercy, He has given us new birth into a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead. There's another theme we've been talking about today, resurrection. And into an inheritance that can never perish, spoil, or fade. Who gets an inheritance? Heirs, right? Children. Legitimate children. Kept in heaven for you, who through faith are shielded by God's power until the coming of the salvation that is ready to be revealed in the last time. In this you greatly rejoice, though now, for a little while, you may have had to suffer grief in all kinds of trials. These have come so that your faith, of greater worth than gold, which perishes even though refined by fire, may be proved genuine and may result in praise, glory, and honor when Jesus Christ is revealed. If God wants me to learn a lesson, this offering, His offering me a He's offering a blessing that I should want. It doesn't seem good, right? What it said in Hebrews, where it's painful when it happens, right? No discipline is pleasant. And I'm not saying every bad thing is discipline, but some of it is. We're told that He disciplines us. But look for the lesson. We don't want to repeat any lessons unnecessarily. think I missed a reference I wanted to look up. Proverbs 16:16 says, "How much better to get wisdom than gold, to get insight rather than silver." So the fourth step, take whatever action that you can to fix whatever the situation is. Sometimes there's not going to be much you can do. It depends on what it is. But I'm going to do whatever's in my power, both for the situation and to learn the lesson. But the difference with this action and just busy work is this is action with faith. I think the irony about this whole thing is when I pray first and I give the rest to God, it makes it easier for me to do my part. Because I know it doesn't all depend on me. And one of the things that keeps me from acting when I need to is I'm afraid of failure. What if I don't succeed? So then I do nothing, which is failure. It's not smart, but it's my nature. So whenever I remember to do this and I put it on God, it makes it easier for me to take action. And it's funny that when I take action in this way, things seem to work out. Just as we couldn't fix our problem with sin without Jesus, we can't expect to fix our other problems without God. No problems get solved without God. Over and over in the Scripture, we have examples of people who are required to do something, and then God moved too. He says, "You do this, I'll move too." Okay, so had a whole crowd of people that were hungry. Boy gave 5 loaves and 2 fishes. God made up the difference. Naaman had to dip in the Jordan 7 times. Did that do anything for him? It was his action. He took action. God did the rest. He couldn't cure himself of leprosy, but God could. Woman with the issue of blood. She'd been to doctors. She'd exhausted her savings trying to fix that. And Jesus fixed it for her after she took action and touched his cloak, right? His garment. And when Peter and Jesus owed money to the government for taxes, Peter still had to go get the fish that had the coin in the mouth. So in each of these instances, we see we are supposed to have faith, and then we're supposed to take some sort of action, the action that we think is right. I found a quote several years ago, but I've really liked it, and I've hit it several times reading different things. It says, "Until one is committed," this is from a man named William Hutchison Murray, which I don't know much about him other than this quote, but I really like the quote. "Until one is committed, there is hesitancy, the chance to draw back, always ineffectiveness. Concerning all acts of initiative and creation, there is one elementary truth, the ignorance of which kills countless ideas and splendid plans. That the moment one definitely commits oneself, then providence moves too. All sorts of things occur to help one that would never otherwise have occurred. A whole stream of events issues from the decision, raising in one's favor all manner of unforeseen incidents and meetings and material assistance, which no man could have dreamt would have come his way." This has been my experience too. When I read that, I can think of things that have happened that have worked out that way. And sometimes it's not the life-changing problems. It works on little problems. So, for instance, I mentioned a motorcycle accident earlier. For the last 2 years, I've had the bike in my garage. I've gotten it out and just ridden it around Prairie City a couple of times because I fixed everything but the cosmetic damage. And I love that bike. It's a cool bike. I told Amy, if I had the money to buy a brand new bike, or that one, I'd buy that one, even if I had to pay the same price. But I felt like I dodged a bullet by surviving that last wreck so well, and I thought I might not survive the next less than skillful driver. So I kept going back and forth. I'll sell it. No, I can't sell it. I'd sell it, Or I'd decide to sell it, and I'd wash it, and it'd be sitting out in the sun, and I'd fire it up, and I can't sell it. So it's funny because more recently I decided, okay, I'm definitely going to sell it. And I was talking with one of my students on a Friday, and we started talking motorcycles because he'd ridden to class, and he's like, I'm looking for something a little more powerful. I said, oh, well, I just told him that I had this Aprilia. And I said, I've been thinking about selling that. He's like, I might be interested. Okay, well, you can come look at it. And I thought, well, it'll be easier for me to get rid of it if I replace it with something else. So I decided, I've been wanting a new welder. So I'll sell the bike, I'll use the money to buy my welder, and then I feel like I got something fun out of it, and I'll sell my old welder. That night, Mason called me and said, hey, you want to sell your welder? Yeah. Yeah, I do. And we worked a little trade because he wanted to trade something else. So, and I sold the thing that we traded already. I don't think I mentioned that yet. But all these things have just worked out just perfectly. And it's not a matter, in this case, it's not a matter of right or wrong, or I don't think God would see it as sinful if I don't sell it. There's nowhere in the scripture that I can prove that it's good or bad. But if you just trust that it'll all work out all right, and you have faith, and you're looking for lessons, it seems like things just go better. And I can't prove that, but it's amazing to me how often these sorts of things happen. There's a writing of Solomon in Proverbs that I think about a lot, and there's always been questions about, well, that can't be literal. The more I think about it, the more I feel like it is literal. But it's Proverbs 16:3-4. Commit to the Lord whatever you do, and your plans will succeed. The Lord works out everything for his own ends, even the wicked for a day of disaster. If my goal is to do things that are glorifying to God, and I want my life to be pleasing to him, and I trust him that things will work out the way he wants them, then I've committed my plans toward him, and he will help them to work out the way he wants them. And I have to trust when they don't work out exactly like I expect. Like, I didn't expect anything on any of these things that have happened. I didn't know what was coming. It just sort of happened. But if you put your faith in him and you are looking for the lessons and looking for him taking action, that gives you more things to be grateful for. I was floored when Mason called about the welder. I talked to him about it maybe 3 months ago. Maybe I'd upgrade a welder or something. But he calls me the same day, within hours of talking with the other guy. Crazy. I just keep trusting that things will work out, even when things go badly. One of the greatest things, this is going to sound really weird, one of the greatest blessings I think I've had was that year where I was off work. Because I was going month to month not knowing how we were going to pay bills or buy groceries or pay for gas or utilities or anything. But just watching God provide. Okay, it's July. House payment's coming. God provides. Okay, it's August. House payment coming. God provides. For 12 months. Some of you guys were involved in that. That was God using you. Right? It wasn't me. It was people put money in our cup holder in the parking lot. One of you mailed us Aldi gift cards, and I suspect I know who it is, but I wouldn't call anybody out. But all of these things happen, and it works out. It's when we try to do it all ourselves that it doesn't work out, because we don't have faith. And we're not looking for lessons, and we end up repeating the same lessons over and over again. I think the biggest part of the whole thing is trusting and paying attention. If I could break this down into two things, it would be trusting and paying attention. Because God is giving you messages, God is throwing blessings at you, He has lessons He wants you to learn. And He's watching over you. He loves you. He hasn't forgotten about you. He hasn't stopped listening. He's not asleep or on vacation like they taunted the prophets of Baal about. He's paying attention. So trusting and paying attention to what's going on around you. Perhaps patience and trust in Him are what He wants us to learn. I'm often curious when something happens if it's a blessing or curse or a lesson. Because I've decided I can't tell. When bad things happen, I ask myself, is that bad? It seems pretty bad. Is it bad? And then I look back at all the things I thought were pretty bad that have been great blessings. When work was slow, I never went back to construction. I got hired on at John Deere because construction was still slow. And I got valuable industrial experience that's unusual among my peers that made me a better candidate for an instructor. You see how these things that are seem like a curse are blessings a lot of times. Not always, but a lot of times. And now I've gotten to the point where I feel like even if I can't see that it's a blessing, I assume that it is, either for me or for someone else, because it's been proven so many times. The peace from our training is knowing there's no such thing as adversity because God is looking after us. There's hard patches, but a lot of these adversities are blessings, and we don't know it. Everything God provides is for our good. We have blessings. We have stepping stones to blessings, physical or through a lesson. We have blessings in disguise. And we have an opportunity to be a vessel and work on someone else's life, either directly or by our example. So I want to go back to Hebrews. I'm almost done. Getting close. This is later in that same chapter, Hebrews 12, verses 25 through 29. As I read this, I want you to be thinking about we are part of this kingdom that cannot be shaken. And everything that happens here is temporary except our adoption by God. See to it that you do not refuse Him who speaks. If they did not escape when they refused Him who warned them on earth, how much less will we if we turn away from Him who warns us from heaven? At that time His voice shook the earth, but now He has promised, once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens. The word once more indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe, for our God is a consuming fire. The only thing that will last is those of us that are with God, right? Our adoption as sons is the only thing that matters that happens here. It doesn't feel like that because of their day-to-day life. You know, encroaches on us, and we have different desires and fears and anxieties. But the only thing that really matters is where we end up in the end, because this is a blip. Compared to eternity, this is over like that. It's kind of like the perspective a child has. You ever been with a child in the waiting room? It's like some sort of medieval torture chamber for parents. Because that, you know, if you wait for 15 minutes, the child feels like it's an eternity because their perspective is short, right? We look at our lives and we think, wow, you know, I got all this going on. We think how full our day is. A day isn't even a tick of a second on eternity, on the clock of eternity. It's nothing. A year may not even register. It's just so short by comparison. But does God discipline us? Yes, he does. Is every bad thing that happens God's discipline? No. Some of it's chance and circumstance. But we can learn from almost all of it. And the biggest takeaway I want you guys to get is we need to trust continually and look for the lesson. We pay attention and trust continually. Look for the lesson and things that are going well and trust. These are my thoughts for this morning. If there's anyone here who has not accepted Christ or has something to bring before the group, we'd love to help you as we stand and sing.